Rescuing the Light. Quotes from the Oral Teachings of Martin Prechtl. By Martin Prechtl. North Atlantic Books, Berkeley, California. This book is dedicated to those courageous beings, both in our pasts and still today, who have dared to imagine and work ceaselessly to cause a time of hope beyond their own to sprout into existence, a time they will never see, but whose labor towards has made them ancestors worth descending from. Introduction. Dear highly esteemed reader, this is a little letter from me, Martin Prechtl, by way of a prefatory note to say hello. Hello to you, and to bless you and all your people, bless all your plants, bless your animals, and bless your artistic endeavors, and especially your efforts toward the eventual appearance of a diverse compendium of real human cultures that could learn to live again in the arms of our true natural mother that has always held and fed all of us, the flowering earth. This book, Rescuing the Light, is meant as a gift to all of you who are trying so hard to keep your minds and souls afloat in these tense, amazing times. It is simply a very small grouping of sayings and quotes I have spoken during the last 15 years of Bolut Kitchen's sessions, my non-school school of everything here in New Mexico. I asked those students who, for the last 15 years or more, who have been coming and making Bolut Kitchen school the amazing phenomena it has become, to send in any sentences they heard me say that helped them to remember what was being taught when they were here, when the disjointed worldwide noise of modern life came crashing in on them, when they would go back to their lives. Though only less than one quarter of the deluge of what they sent me is included here, each quote represents the small child of a much, much bigger ongoing teaching, which is his mother. In the late 1990s and early 2000s, when I was still crisscrossing the beautiful oceans and earth, teaching and ritualizing groups of people all over the world, the mass proliferation of pop computer culture riding global business was really starting to kick in. Like all established civilizations, most of my colleagues saw this internet et al. As a wonderful business opportunity to reach people everywhere in the world. A couple of us, however, did not share the initial mass euphoria and unquestioned embracing of the badly titled, quote, information age, unquote. While others can argue for the social benefits of this out-of-control, wasteful cyber phantom, it has caused the gradual, organic, earthbound mystery reality of the initiatory learning of native and other worthy people of the past to be basted with a sauce of Disney-like collective inferior function and served half-cooked and unprovenienced on a platter of superficial cyber-virtual effects and living room Skyped seances. Well, all of this made me and mine head into another approach. It was not the iPhone, and it wasn't the computer that caused the post-literate age of mental venereal disease, the addiction to the veneer of things. For it was already very present in modernity, but with the cyber age, this shallowness received an unmerited boost with an untested weapon that made unnatural living seem normal and natural. Though amazing in dimension, where scientific and scholarly study could build moving models beyond all imagining in the past, nonetheless, against the backdrop of massively empowered unfair political and economic chicaneries, criminalist pornography, money scam industries, violence, hate, and general earth and ocean destruction at the hands of now light-speed corporate competition and its takeover of all aspects of modern life, the warning information that science itself clearly spelled through its computer projection was and is laughingly ignored by a public who, in the trance of the cyber-generated age, believes that there is no future. And if so, the least common denominator of emotion should rule, where a numbed-out public simply trundles down the cyber-beam wave, landing as lesser souls, incapable of love, incapable of turning away from its addiction, who have now in less than a generation already atrophied physically and mentally in a way where real life can no longer be perceived, much less treasured and sought after. But not everybody. To keep alive a more inside the earth way of learning, a few teachers thought that thinking and feeling people should form quote-unquote monastic communities to live together, intentional communities to keep alive common life ways and thoughts. This mystery school reaction to the pop threat to a slower ancestral way of being actually paralleled what happened in many eras of ancient and medieval history in Byzantium, China, and the post-Roman Empire Europe, the Caucasus, Old Greece, Western and North Africa, and especially in Spain, where schools, not in keeping with the sovereign cultures of the age, maintained libraries and sessions and even whole towns who lived and thought differently. Commonly taught history often forgets most of these, and as for the ones it does not, it mistakenly claims their teachers as products of the culture inside of which they were found. But in every case, these teachers and their students were in total defiance to what politics and horror the outer culture endorsed, and in most cases had to disappear, sometimes to reappear in other places or in other times or even both. My personal response to the massive loss of human mental, physical, and social substance was not the endorsement of a monastic community, because to me that would be too elite, too exclusionary of the world, and too limited for legitimate discovery to thrive. Instead, I proposed an ongoing non-residential class, a school in which all the students continued to live their own lives as they saw fit, in their own cities, in their towns, villages, farms, or as hermits, or wherever life found them, who could then, like nomads of old, converge together with their families biannually for 10 days to learn what grand attempts amazing people and places in history had made in pockets of peace, mystery, and capacity to keep alive the small, the beautiful, and the necessary in the past. This, combined with teaching from my own background as well, which included a spiritual approach to the hands-on making of tangible tools, music, seeds, food, clothing, jewelry, and many other things that I knew how to do fairly well, that corresponded to all those eras, in a school whose very construction corresponded using old-time methods, spiritual dimensions, and building materials, I designed and caused to be piled, adobe by adobe, a single-roomed mud palace that could hold 200, where students could come and learn by lecture and the hands, the ancient art forms in music, food, silversmithing, ironsmithing, spinning, felting, and all the arts that went with the world's hidden spiritual and intellectual learning. Bolad's Kitchen was the name I chose to call my little non-school, a name which continues to be a bit of a riddle for some, as well as a banner of bright historical remembrance. Bolad Akha was a brilliant person of the 14th century who became the head administrator for the recently instated Mongol emperor Kublai Khan, grandson of the great Genghis Khan, on the throne of China. The immense brilliance and capacity of nomadic tribal Mongol thinking as applies to their new role in attempting to rule a gigantic empire of settled people has been widely recognized by scholars. In what most people think they know about nomad cultures, there remains a general, misguided mainstream prejudice, clouding the truth of the sophisticated indigenous reality of the North Asian origins of all Indo-European cultures as ancient horse nomads. While Mongol culture is not Indo-European, it is the most recent inheritor of the older Indo-European horse cultures, which were neither barbaric nor simple. When I discovered upon reading Thomas T. Allison's Culture and Conquest in Mongol Eurasia, that in the 1300s, all the head administrators overseeing both Mongol warriors and citizens were not only in charge of organic gardening and the proliferation of bioregional and interregional food growing sustainability, but were also required to be
sample complete. Ready to continue?